bench coach of the Giants joins us, Ron Wotus. Well, good morning.
Good morning, Marty. Good to be with you this
morning. How'd you like that report from Barry Bloom?
Very interesting, you know, to hear some of the inductees and hear about them. And, you know, I don't know anything about those guys. So it was interesting. And it sounds wonderful to be there. You know, I grew up in Connecticut, and to be in upstate New York this time of year and in beautiful Cooperstown, and to go through the ceremonies and see all the great Hall of Famers that have been inducted and the people and the buzz there, it's probably a tremendous time.
Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
Really?
I think Lake George is probably the closest we've been to up there in upstate New York. Never been to Cooperstown. Someday, hopefully, I'll make it.
Oh, you got to see it. It really is something. I've been there. As I talked to Dwayne about this yesterday in the talkback. We're always working. So
right.
It's tough to go in July.
Sure.
But if you go in the off season, it's really pretty interesting to see it. And the plaques and all the memorabilia. And you realize how long this game has been around.
No question. The history, I want to make it out there. When it happens, I don't know. But at some point, I will go.
Yeah, I thought, listening to Barry Bloom, you know, the Giants were involved in that with Hank O'Day, who was the umpire, in the Fred Merkel play. And when you think about it, I mean, that's still a play that could happen today. And
sure.
Just a quick summary of it, Merkel was on first. The winning run was on third. There's a base hit. The winning run scores. And in those days, people swarmed the field. And horses came out on the field. It was crazy. So everybody's on the field. Merkel takes off for the dugout. Doesn't go to second to tag second. And the Cubs asked for the ball. Well, the Giant pitcher, Ian Joe McGinty, threw it in the stands. It was gone. And first of all, they had one ball. That was it. One baseball. That was it. So the Cubs get a ball, somehow tag second base. And the umpire, who had ruled against the Cubs a couple of weeks earlier, now the league president says, no, you got to touch second base. They call him out. The Giants and Cubs end up in a tie for the pennant. They replay the game because it's a tie game. You asked me, couldn't they continue the game at that point? No, it was like a million people on the field.
Right.
You know, the milk wagon was on the field at that point. So they replay the game, and certainly the Cubs win, and that's the story.
It's a heck of a story.
But you still have to deal with that, don't you, as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's a play that certainly Tim Flannery, you know, in spring training, he always brings it up. And, he, you know, when he covers his base running, he goes around the bases, and he talks about the Merkel play, the bonehead play that cost him the game and the pennant, and he covers it every year. So to hear Barry Bloom talk about it today, and the umpire that was involved with that being inducted, it's special. That's a very interesting story, and it's something that we all learn from. You know, as a coach, you cringe when you hear these stories, but you don't. You know, in baseball, something happens every day that you haven't seen before, and the crazy things happen in this game.
How about Hank O'Day, the umpire? And one umpire. This is it. Can you imagine doing a game with?
No.
Imagine what's going on in the field.
That's the other thing that strikes me. To have one umpire, you know, controlling the whole game. I mean, what do we have? Six during the playoffs,
and they can't get it right.
Well, it's, you know, the game has come so far, but you know, this is how it's evolved. And as you said, one baseball. That's the other thing that's extremely odd to me. When we played, you know, whenever you got a ground ball or a foul ball, you'd take that baseball and you'd want to give it back to the pitcher because he had a feel for that ball. You know, it felt good in his hand. He's getting people out. But today the game has evolved so far that every ball's thrown out. You know, the ball hits the dirt, foul tip, they scuff, they throw it out. Infielders get the ball. They don't think about getting it back to the pitcher. The catcher used to, he'd block a ball in the dirt. It would kick away. He'd run, go get that ball and get it back to the pitcher. Today they just put their hand up and the umpire gives them a new ball. So things keep evolving.
Yeah. When did all that start? I mean, you've been around the game a long time. Did it start in the big leagues recently? When did they go to, you know, the ball just has changed so rapidly?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, because of the scuffs on the baseball. And they want a clean ball in the game. And, I mean, we do it routinely, too. You'll see, you know, the pitcher will make his warm-up pitches. And some catchers purposely throwing the ball down the second will short hop it. to the infielder, so it scuffs the ball a little bit. Then the pitcher gets that ball. Well, you know, we watch that, and Boach watches that, and you hear our guy screaming, you know, check the ball. So player goes to hit, we'll check the ball, and typically that ball's thrown out. So, you know, they don't want anybody to get an unfair advantage with a scuff ball. I don't know how many pitchers even know how to utilize a scuff ball today, but, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was a big deal. There were pitchers that would know how to take advantage of that scuff and make that ball dart or dive or do something different, and it's pretty much, you know, gone out of the game.
Wow. I always learned something. Javi Lopez is listening in the car somewhere for his baseball lesson, and I never realized that the catcher will one-hop the ball to second and then try to keep that ball in the game. I like that.
Yeah, you see that a lot. You see that a lot. And, you know, not as much today as you did in the past, but we certainly watch for it.
All right, Ron Wotus with us. Last one, it was his Deacon White going in. And, of course, he caught in the 1800s. And they said his hands were like, his fingers were like branches on a tree. That's how they went in every different direction. No glove, but you caught it on a bounce. But still, he made like 3,000 errors.
Well, I would think so. Without a glove, that's tough duty.
God, it's funny. It is. That's what baseball's all about. I have fun doing this. I appreciate you being here this morning. All right, let's talk about this ball club, and the mirth ends with that, because the club is struggling. And, you know, I said it's a week-to-week deal. We're on last week. I said, all right, the Reds are coming in. You had the two games against Arizona heading into Sunday. Then it's the Cubs after that. And a week later, and all of a sudden the gloom has hit over the ball club.
Yeah, well, you know, it doesn't matter right now whether we're playing, you know, the Reds or the Cubs or whoever it is. We're in a tough stretch, and we got to fight our way out of it. You know, that's the bottom line. And, you know, hopefully today's the day we start playing better baseball and start moving forward. And that's all you can do is chip away at this thing and take it a game at a time, a pitch and at bat at a time, and keep fighting to get out of this funk that we're in.
What's the psyche of a team like this? Now, look, you're world champions, and, you know, you still have the feeling of the honeymoon and the 42,000 out there. But, you know, you lose a game last night. I imagine the clubhouse is deathly quiet. The night before, same kind of thing on an error, deathly quiet. What's it like being around these guys now?
Well, you want to keep your inner confidence. I mean, you know, because you need to draw on that to get out of something like this. But there's no question when you're in a funk like this and you're not playing well, it affects your confidence and it affects the psyche of the ball club. But, you know, there's no quit. These guys understand what needs to be done to get out of it. But, you know, you got to play. You just have to go out there and put the past behind you. And, you know, you put the World Series behind. That's long gone. This is a new year. We're in a new place. And like I said, you know, you like to keep the confidence knowing that you've done it and what you're doing is correct. And you draw on your experiences to fight out of this thing and start playing better baseball.
Ron Wotus with us. You know, I was thinking last night, you know, I get all the calls and sometimes you get to listen to them on the way home. And I was saying to myself, you know, again, years past, if a player didn't do the correct thing on the field, he would be fined. Now, of course, they make so much money today. You know, there's probably grievances and all that. You probably can't fine them. But do they still do that? I mean, I was thinking about Blanco as a leadoff hitter, just as an example. Uh-huh. Four fly balls. You know, and I'd say, look, next time you hit a fly ball, it'll cost you $1,000 or whatever. But does that happen anymore? The players get fined? Is there any way you do that?
Yeah, you know what? It does on occasion. You know, a lot of times coaches will use it as a, you know, a motivational thing. I mean, they really don't want to take any money, but, you know, sometimes they'll play games with them in the cage. They'll say, okay, this BP round, you know, this happens quite a bit, actually. A guy that you want to keep the ball on the ground, you tell him, okay, if you hit a fly ball or you hit the top of the cage, you owe me, you know, 50 cents, okay. You know, and they play a little game. And, you know, if he hits it on the ground, the coach will give him the money back. So they're trying to just emphasize the point of the approach they want in the player. That happens. And, you know, some players do get fined here and there. I mean, you know, the bonehead Merkel play, those are the things that, you know, sometimes when you're not playing good, they'll stick in your craw, and it gets to the point where you know, enough is enough, and sometimes guys do get fined.
Yeah, I was wondering about it, because years past, you know, you'd say they'd bring you in the office and fine you. Of course, $200 then was a lot of money.
Sure.
Not to a guy who's making, you know, $3 million or $4 million. But it's the idea, I think.
Right,
that's the, you know, your rapport with the player. That's the toughest part for the coach, how far you can go in getting sort of heavy with a player.
Yeah, you look, nobody wants to, you know, take money to take money. It's more of the point you're trying to make, that you, that something needs to change, or, you know, this can't happen, and that's the bottom line. I think most of the fine systems, you know, you talk about the old kangaroo court.
Yeah, oh, good. You still do that?
Put into play. We've done it recently, you know, not this year, but there's been years that's been instituted, and, you know, I'm not sure if other clubs are doing it, but it's not done as much. But, you know, those are ways sometimes that you can make your point, and you have a little system, you know, whether it's with the offense or the defense, you know, like great plays, you get rewarded, you know, heads up play, you get rewarded, and conversely, you know, errors or bonehead plays, you know, you get fined, and, you know, they have the court where the guys come in, and they you get the veterans on the team, and they're the judge and jury, and they lay down the fines, and it's a, you know, it's a positive way to have a little fun, and to, you know, point out the mistakes that the guys are making, and try to get better.
Who was the judge when this would happen? Who?
Well, I think we did it a little bit in 2010, if my memory serves me correct. I think Huff was probably a judge. I'm sure Pat Burrell was a judge somewhere along the line in Kangaroo Courts. I think Matt Cain has probably done it with us. And usually you look to the senior guys on the club and the guys that can handle that thing and can lay down the law, and they're usually the judges.
Pretty good. Always a pleasure to learn a little bit more about baseball from you. The belt play the other day of trying to score. Pitchers looking in the stands saying, oh, my God, I gave up a hit. Ball bounces back to him. Just from a baseball sense, he happened to be the one involved with the play. How does a runner read a play like that when the ball goes past the catcher and it is not caught on a backup?
Yeah. Well, you know, his read, I didn't see his read. Certainly we were, you know, in a different spot, and I didn't see that. But, you know, when a ball gets by, your first instinct is to advance to the next base. And, you know, obviously that's what he did. He saw the ball get by, and, you know, whether he saw the guy backing up or which way the ball kicked, I don't know. But he saw the ball get by, and his exuberance to try to score, you know, he got caught in no man's land. The guy was backing up. The ball kicked to him, and they made the play on him. So, you know, you go back to the base running, and you know, when you're running the bases, you know, people say be aggressive, and you need to be aggressive, but you got to have good judgment as well, and that always enters into the play. I mean, you want to be aggressive with good judgment, and, you know, sometimes things like that happen, but those are the types of things that we're trying to cut out.
Yeah, in this ballpark, it's a small backstop. You know, the ball's not, it's not Yankee Stadium where it's going to go on forever, and you got to factor that in.
Yeah, you factor it in. And usually, you know, when you go to parks, you look at the backstop, how close it is, how the ball kicks, and like you said, if it's a close backstop, you have to be a little more prudent on when you go and when you don't, even on pass balls.
Sure.
I mean, you're thinking about going, you're anticipating to go, but the position of the backstop does make a difference.
Well, we talked about that a little bit on the Sandoval play last week.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that it's a short bat, and they came right back to the catcher, and they got him.
Right. That's where the runner's got to use their instincts and their judgment. There's no time to coach them at that point. They're reading the play, and they make their decision, and they go.
All right, trip coming up. You go back to the White House. To tell me what you anticipate and a little bit of what it was like last time.
Yeah. Well, we'll get in there tonight late, and we'll spend the night in D.C. And then get up and head to the White House about noon. I mean, look, it's always a neat thing to go to the White House, and there was a lady on staff that works at the White House. It's a big giant fans that knows Mike Murphy here, and given us some private tours before we've gone to meet the president, and that was always neat to be able to go behind the scenes and see the movie room of the president where they sit down and eat popcorn and watch movies, but when you meet the president, it's even more special. And, you know, the thing that you know, kind of strikes me a little odd is when we go in there, you'll see the whole team will be hanging out for a little bit. They'll have a little rehearsal of the actual event that goes on because, you know, there's a lot of people. We go up on stage and then the president comes in. So they have a little rehearsal on what's going to transpire before the president comes in. We go through that. We go back out. And guys are just, this is what strikes me. They're lounging around all around. You see the green room, you know, the blue room. You see Lindsay come over here and Matt Cain. You see your players all over sitting on the furniture and hanging out in the White House. And it's kind of neat to see, you know. So they give you the run of the place, and hopefully we don't break anything. And we go through the process of meeting the president, and he comes in and gives his little speech.
Does everyone get to shake his hand?
Well, he did last time when the speech was over. I mean, I don't know how many people were on stage behind him. Quite a few, over 50, you know, the team and other people from the front office and owners and different people. And he took the time. He shook everybody's hand. I was in the back, far back, as far as you can go, next to Dave Fleming. And he made sure he reached up and he got everybody's hand.
Well, did he say anything to you?
No, there really wasn't any time. He's, you know, he shakes a lot of hands, this guy, and he can't stop and talk to all of them. So, no, he shook our hand, didn't have a chance to speak to him.
What was the most impressive thing about the White House, just the physical structure?
Well, I think when you start going through and you, as you said, the physical structure, the size of it, mostly, you know, what it represents in the history of the place. You see the paintings of, you know, all the presidents. You see other photos of, you know, the Kennedys and the kids playing and different things like that. And when you start looking at these things, you know, the history of our nation starts to come to the forefront. And, of course, in the dining room, they got the big portrait of, you know, Abraham Lincoln. So, yeah, I mean, you go down memory lane for the country when you start walking through here and looking at the photographs. So it's a special place.
Well, amazing. All right, Ron Wotus with us. You know, I always ask these questions. Do they feed you at all? Any snacks? Any bowls of potato chips or anything like that?
No, that would be nice.
Nothing.
I don't remember us getting any food. I think a couple of us were trying to get into the kitchen, which wasn't far off of the floor that we're on. But no, we didn't eat.
All right. From there, Philadelphia, then another dome. This is Tampa Bay. Yeah. I mean, we know what happened in Toronto.
Yeah.
Prepare any differently and going into Tampa?
Well, not necessarily. You know, we'll try to hopefully we'll hit. It's a dome, so you're not going to be rained out. But it'll be nice to get on a turf. You know, the ball reacts different on AstroTurf. And there's only two AstroTurf fields left, you know, Toronto and Tampa. We hit both of them this year. We used to play it on all the time, so it is an adjustment. You know, I bet you there's guys on our club that, you know, probably some of them haven't played on turf. So other than Toronto, if they were here. So it's an adjustment. No, you're just aware of it. You'll cover things that, you know, the turf does, but it'll be business as usual. We'll get ready to play the game.
Yeah, what's the key for you when you go on turf? The big bounce in the outfield or the speed in the infield? You play deeper? What's the key there?
Yeah, you can play a little bit deeper, certainly, on the infield, and probably what drives, you know, the outfielders crazy is the way the ball can bounce. Yeah. And most of the turfs today aren't as spongy, you know. Right. Back in the day, you know, it'd give outfielders fits because, you know, you come in for a ball on grass and you get caught in between. You can try to block it and keep it in front, but on turf, it'll take that bounce. It actually can bounce over your head, and then you're in real trouble. So you have to play the ball a little bit different. It's a lot quicker. I think that's the big thing. The infield's a lot quicker, and you got to be ready. You got to have that glove down in position because the ball can get by you in a hurry.
Yeah, boy. Well, what a week coming up, huh? What a week. White House, Philly, Tampa Bay. And what a life, huh?
Well, yeah, a little bit of everything.
And you have to win a few games in the midst of all that.
Well, that's the plan. You know, that's really what's at the forefront here. The White House is a great thing. It'll be nice when we're there. But our focus is winning a game today.
And it'll be nice when July 31st is passed. I don't care what your team is, who you are. There's always that question. The players even ask me, "You heard anything?" I mean, there's always that moment of trades.
Sure, I'm sure there's some guys in the clubhouse, guys that think that might be traded. They're in that type of position. But I think, you know, all in all, certainly with the coaching staff and the rest of us, you know, winning the game today is at the forefront. And I know it is for the players, but you're right. It does enter the mind of many players, and they have to, you know, block that out and go out in the field and play baseball.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Have a good trip. trip, and I look forward to seeing. Let's see, it'll be a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
I think the Orioles will be in town next time you and I will chat here. But I appreciate you coming in on Hall of Fame induction weekend. Jacob Rupert had a good weekend, I want to tell you.
Yeah,
he got Yankee Stadium, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, and won about 47 pennants. So he got it going.
That's great.
Not bad.
All right, Marty. Good being
Thank
with you.
You. All right. That is Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants. More coming up right here on KBR 680, the sports leader.